Hi, you're listening to Cookies and Cream, episode 19. So on this episode, we're going to be talking about a somewhat sensitive subject. We are talking about alcohol. The elephant in the room called alcohol. We talk about different things, mostly about how our faith and alcohol interact, if they do at all. But this is a good one. So tune in, listen in, let us know what you think, and also stay tuned for a number that may be helpful to you or someone you know. Hi, I'm Lisa.
And I'm Rob.
And you're listening to a podcast about
life,
faith,
family,
and relationships.
Yo, what's up, guys? How you doing?
It's Friday.
It's Friday, guys. We're so glad you're here. We're so glad you're listening to Cookies and Cream.
That was funny how you said it.
That's my accent now. I choose this accent for today.
Okay, weirdo.
Lisa's like, what are you doing? What are you doing, Rob? You throw everyone off. Guys, we want to thank you. iTunes sent us some information, and our most listened to episodes are episode 1 and episode 17. So a lot of you tuned in. A lot of you plugged in to listen to our new year, new me, new year, new you episode. And yeah. We're so thankful. We're so thankful that you listen to this podcast. Because if it wasn't for you, we would still be around. Life would actually go on. We're not getting paid to do this. Let's not overvalue our listeners. Thank you for listening, but yeah. I'm pretty sure life would still be fine.
It would. And we would probably still do this.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's not like we're being sponsored by, like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of a local empanada mama. Like, every episode, you get 3 empanadas. I'll be in there.
That'd be pretty cool.
I have shocks. Can you imagine? Maybe you need to reach out. Maybe you need to reach out to empanada mama.
That's a good idea.
That would be funny.
That would be.
It's like weird. They don't even know what they're sponsoring.
True.
Yeah, true. That's true. Well,
for free advertising.
Yeah, free. Yeah, absolutely. Free advertising. But yeah, guys, you know what? We can't read a review, but we do get to speak to people. People message us. And we had a lot of good interaction last week. We had a couple of our listeners let us know a few things about last week's episode. Anything you wanna say specifically? Because I have something.
Well, then
so
go
I'll just
ahead.
Open the door for
I'm
you.
Like, it's just. You got to say, man.
Yeah, well, I had a good friend of mine send a message in just saying, hey, listen, they love the episode. And they were just like, it's just thinking about it. You know, they've dealt with millennials before, thinking about like all of that. They were like, it was really insightful. Mm. And then they actually even brought up a question. And they're like, hey, you know.
I like questions.
And the question kind of was like, hey, maybe something to think about. Those buy one, give one away initiatives so popular with millennials, because it's just maybe putting your money in a situation rather than actually getting your hands dirty. They were like, they're not a millennial, but they were like, is that part of the drive? Maybe that's a little bit of the attraction to it. And I was like, that's valid, you know, because we don't have the end all be all of every situation. That's not who we are. We are just trying to start conversation. So we're so thankful for your feedback. Thankful that you listen to this podcast every week. So shout out to you guys. I didn't ask for permission. Like, I always realized I didn't ask for permission to
so
share.
You can't mention
I can't mention
name.
The name, you know what I mean?
Unless well,
I
if you're listening,
shoot a quick text,
you know who you are.
Yeah, you know who you are. This is it. So yeah, so Lise, what are we talking about today? What's today's episode about?
So today we are talking about the elephant in the room called alcohol.
Ooh. Like elephant in the room called alcohol.
Ha ha, Rob, funny.
Wow. Why is alcohol an elephant in the room? Like, I'm trying to think
you
to
tell
myself.
You tell me.
No. We have show notes, guys. We have show notes. But
show notes.
Yeah, that's what these things on my computer in front of us are, Lise. Like, just in case, guys, we're staring at a green wall. You know, it's like, oh, Cookies and Cream is like sitting with Rob and Lisa having coffee. Well, you should add to that. Cookies and cream is like sitting with Rob and Lisa having coffee, sitting on an uncomfortable cushion, staring at a green wall. That's what you should say.
Oh my god.
That's the real. That's the real. Looking at episode notes.
I do have my coffee though.
You do. I have rooibos tea. You should try it. Rooibos. You should.
It's really good.
It's like a red tea. It's very, very healthy, and it helps you when you're feeling a little under the weather. So anyway, we're talking about alcohol.
Yes.
And alcohol is an elephant in the room.
Mm-hmm.
You know why alcohol is an elephant in the room?
Why?
Because alcoholism affects 14 million adults in the United States. All right, that's one in every 13 adults.
Wow.
It's a real stat. Yeah. Alcohol is a real thing. And we're particularly talking about Christianity and alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we come into this like knowing that this affects almost every single family. If that's the statistic, if that statistic is accurate, it affects every single family
mm-hmm.
in this country. It affects a lot of the families I know in my home country.
Yeah.
If not every single family mm-hmm. in my home country as well. So I just don't think like alcohol is an elephant in the room because I've never spoken about it.
Yeah.
I've never spoken about alcoholism. I've never spoken about the dangers, the temptations of alcohol. In fact, sometimes I feel like it's kind of like not even, it's kind of like even presented in a way that it doesn't have a negative to it. It's like we all know the negative, but we never talk about the negative.
Yeah, that's true.
You know
that's
what I mean?
Very true. Yeah.
So that's why it's an elephant in the room. That's why I think it's because also it affects 3 million teenagers in the United States. So I didn't even tell you this, but I watched a Vice. It went viral. It was a clip of this TV show called Vice, where they do like investigative, you know, journalism.
Okay.
And they went to Zimbabwe actually, and
no way.
Yeah,
they said. But this is it's a show.
It's very recent. Life. Yeah.
Okay.
It's not. It's real life.
Oh.
It's investigative journalism.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
It's like they went to Zimbabwe and there was an epidemic of young people who are out of jobs being affected by like addiction to cough syrup.
So
it's like before that, like people were like, we knew that there was a problem, but they never talked about how it affects young people. And the statistic came out, it was crazy. Mm-hmm. It's like 1 in 4 young people in Zimbabwe were affected by that. And so, talking about this particular thing, talking about alcohol, in the church, talking about faith and alcohol particularly, that's what we're trying to hit at this episode.
Yeah.
So I want to start by saying, hey, listen, if you're listening to this episode, hey, we want to be graceful because we do understand it affects every single family. There's a reason why we don't talk about it because of the shame maybe attached to having family members that have struggled with alcoholism. And so we want to be sensitive, but at the same time, we want to speak truth. You know what I mean? And we want to do it lovingly and we want to have a conversation going. So yeah, so that's a heavy and weighty start, but it's a heavy and weighty conversation, just to be real.
Yeah,
it is. It just is.
It definitely is.
So yeah, so I don't know, any thoughts on just introducing that sensitive subject from your perspective and maybe how you've seen that play out in growing up, like in terms of like your peers, what was that experience?
Well, I think most of the time in my peer group, there was, this again was before I really knew Jesus, but there was a lot of drinking. It was kind of just par for the course. Like on a weekend, you would get together, and whether it was at somebody's house or you went out somewhere, or even going bowling at the bowling alley home, you weren't really going there to bowl. You were going there to drink. So I think it definitely is there, and whether or not you think people are exposed to it or engaging with it or not. If they're not, they know somebody that is. And whether that's a friend or a family member or someone. But yeah, I definitely think it is an issue too that we as the church just shy away from.
Yeah.
Because we're not really sure. I think maybe one, just how to talk about it. And then two, there's always the extremes when it comes to this topic. And I think sometimes as believers, we kind of run away from things that have extremes. Because we're afraid of messy and hard and and I think a lot of the time our thing is, well, what is the answer?
Yeah.
You know, how do we fix it?
Yeah.
And so often with situations like ones that involve alcohol, we may not know what the answer is or how to fix it or what the solution is. So sometimes as believers, I think we find that really difficult and then we shy away from having hard conversations about it.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah, that's good. You know, I wanted to say that, my first actually, my first interaction with alcohol is this. I'll tell you this. Like, I kind of mentioned that my father was like a football manager of a big soccer club back in Zim. And so if the team won, sometimes the after parties would be at our house. And, you know, like, you know, we grew up in a nice suburban area, nice house, like, you know, it was cool. So it had space to host the party. So I remember my brother and I, he's 2 years older than me. We're pretty young, maybe 6, 7, maybe a little older. We would walk around, and as gross as this sounds, we knew it was a forbidden drink. So we would walk around and we would find bottles that weren't completely finished. So it was like just the bottom bits, the backwash. I can't even think about it right now without feeling sick. And we would sip it so that we would taste what beer tastes like. So anyway, my brother is in fourth grade. He's in fourth grade at a Jewish private school. And they ask, what did you do during your vacation?
Oh, yeah.
What did you do during the holiday, the break, the school break? And my brother writes this essay, and it's apparently it was brilliant, but my parents were called in the next day, and my parents were like, why are we being called in? Didn't know. Walked into the office. The teacher says, I'm very concerned, because every other kid, when asked what they did during their vacation, they said, oh, we went and visited my grandma. Oh, we had fun at the park. Oh, we just stayed at home and played video games. But your son said he was just drinking beer. This 9-year-old, can you imagine the shock on this teacher's face?
Oh, my goodness.
He's getting little guys just like, yo, dad. Yeah, Dad, I'll take a Bud Light. Our first experience with alcohol. It was there. It was always it was around, but my parents didn't seem to be all that into it. It was like a special occasion. If it was a party, that's, you know, a wedding, you know, even to be honest, a funeral. Like, that's when I would see people consuming alcohol. But it wasn't like a daily occurrence, or you know, my dad would have a beer after work. Like, it wasn't like, you know, but they weren't believers. And so it was like, it's kind of like that was my foundation for alcohol, which I think was like, hey, it's a thing, but it's not a thing. And it's a thing that you can't have until you're a certain age. And, you know, I always tended to kind of respect that. And so I was like, here's the thing, when it came to faith, that's when it was weird. Because we come from a very moralistic culture.
Yeah, we do.
So in Zimbabwe, it's like, once you open a beer, you're not a Christian. You know what I mean? Like, I remember, like, the first Christian I met who drank, they were like, Batman. I was like, what the heck are you? Some hybrid Christian that can drink and still be saved. It was like a shock. And I think they were actually American missionaries, to be honest.
They were like... Can I have a beer?
And we're like, excuse me, do you still want faith? Do you still want Jesus with that? Do you want Jesus with the beer? It's Jesus or the beer. So it was like that tension coming from a moralistic culture where you find people who say, I can't go to church because I smoke. I can't go to church because I drink. It's always like this conditional, like, hey. So I was, overall, I've literally explained my pre-Christian and Christian experience with alcohol before being in a community where that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
Before even reading the Bible and actually finding what the Bible says about alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, is it wrong to drink, Lee? Biblically.
No.
No? Oh, wow. This is amazing. My wife needs Jesus. Take the wheel. Take the wheel. No, but in all seriousness, please. No, but seriously.
Yeah. So actually, just a fun little side note, so that if you're listening to this, you're like, what is this actually like for Rob and Lisa? I do drink. Rob does not.
Oh, yeah. I don't touch the stuff, man.
So when he jokes, he's also half not joking.
I'm judging.
He's pretty judgmental when he sees me drinking a glass of wine. I just judge
Christians. That's my job.
The eyes are just like,
I just look at my around.
Heathen wife.
I'm like, I don't know. You know what I mean? It's a good thing in heaven we don't get to keep the spouses, you know? It's like...
You know how when they're like, when you're a parent and they say like, oh, don't let, you know, people won't judge you based on your children. That's what Rob's hoping. Where he's like, people won't judge me based on my wife.
Yeah. No, but here's the thing, like changing gears and switching gears, like, yeah. And then the last church that we're at in Zimbabwe wasn't like that. You know, they had a freedom in that. And of course we grew in our faith and, you know, we weren't always at that base. But obviously when we ask the question, is it wrong to drink? Yeah, well, the Bible, I mean, if you think about it, Jesus's first miracle was turning water into wine. And then we can bring the argument, well, was the wine diluted? Was it really?
Did Jesus drink the wine?
Did Jesus even drink the wine? Oh, so Jesus just made wine for people to drink and be like, well, y'all can get in now. And peace I helped out. You. Yeah. Yeah, like, yeah, here's some Merlot, but y'all ain't coming with me. Of course, Jesus made the wine because he was like, it's not wrong. And no matter what, I've read up a little bit on this, not enough, obviously, because we can never read enough. But, you know, it was wine. It wasn't like watered down grape juice. It was wine, especially even in John chapter 2 when the master of the ceremony goes, this is the good stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he knew what wine tastes like.
Right.
He knew the difference between, you know, Veuve Clicquot and Welch. You try. I can't tell. Can't tell if this is a Merlot or it's Welch. I know what they put in the communion cups at church. I know exactly what juice that is.
Oh my.
And also, if that is wrong, like, it's like, that would be just a bad strategy by the Bible and Jesus himself to then say, the thing that you drink in remembrance of me is wine. You know what right. I mean? Like, it's like,
yeah.
So the argument there is, you know, obviously it's not wrong.
Right.
Getting drunk is wrong.
Yeah.
But drinking in and of itself is not wrong. But I think where we get our moralism there in Zimbabwe as well, and in churches that are moralistic, because it's not just Zimbabwe, you know what I mean?
Right.
Is that you find in passages of scripture where people are set apart, and then it says, like John the Baptist, like, don't touch any alcoholic beverage.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, like, oh, so that's a thing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, is that a thing? Is that like the ultimate thing? And you try and like dive in. Obviously, this is not a theology 101. This is a podcast. If you want that, there's a link.
For sure.
Where you can just debate with people about whether or not wine is actually wine in the Bible. But you know what I mean? I'm just reading on the surface what I see.
Yeah.
And so it's not wrong, but getting drunk is.
Right. And I think, and this is just kind of off notes.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Let's go off road. 4x4. 4x4.
But even as you're talking and thinking about, you know, the Bible doesn't say drinking is wrong. Jesus, it's a miracle, turning wood into wine. But drunkenness, it does clearly say that that falls into the category of sin.
Yeah.
Drunkenness, and even just thinking of, well, yeah, because really we're supposed to glorify God, right? In with our bodies, with our minds, with our emotions, with our speech. And you think of when you've had one too many, what starts to go, you know, like your inhibition, your reason, your speech, even like, and just thinking of all those, just suddenly now, as you're talking about it, I was like, and that line, I think, is different for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like you could have one sip and that could really be like, you
don't. That's all I can do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just made me think of that. Like, even just in, because I know people will be like, well, then how much is too much? You know, like how far is too far? You know, like all those questions.
Yeah, yeah.
But really going, I think the moment you're in a space, and we know it, we feel it, because even when it's something else that we are sinning with or doing, you can feel that, like, I know I've crossed a line.
Yeah.
But I think it's so important to be aware of that. And what does that look like for you?
Yeah.
And just, I don't know. Just the thought I was
that's,
having.
Yeah, that's important. Like, not like there isn't like a line. There isn't like a, you know, obviously there's laws, right?
So
there's a certain amount that you're allowed to drink and then drive and operate a car. Actually, to be honest, I just found out from a girl who's studying criminology, and they were like, actually, listen, if you drink and ride a bike, like, you could get, like, you're in trouble. So it's like operating any kind of, being on the roads, basically.
Yeah.
And so there's a law. So obviously don't break the law. Like, that's not pleasing to the Lord.
Exactly.
Like, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
But at the same time, and I've seen Christians who have a breathalyzer that they carry, that when they're somewhere, they take another drink and then they go, okay, I had another drink. They blow into the thing. And then they're like, okay, I know I can't drive. I know. Yeah. I now know that that last drink that I had set me over. I'm going to have to wait for a while.
Yeah.
And I don't know how long the alcohol lasts in the system, but it's like the basic, like, going, I'm not going to break the law, no matter how good I feel about myself.
Yeah.
And I don't drink, so I don't know what it feels like to have those things. And I'll also say this, like, guys, like, I'm trying to dig deep for the grace, you know, in my own heart. Like, this isn't an area of struggle for me.
Yeah.
So I know I can become judgy. Like, even joking around with my wife, like, I can be very judgy about the areas that I don't struggle in, because that's human nature. It's like, well, why would you? You know what I mean? Like, it's like, but it's like the reality is, like, I have to keep on reminding myself that I have areas in my life where I struggle, where I want grace to be poured on. But this particular thing, it's so complex, especially alcohol. Like, it's complicated. Like, you have to unravel it piece by piece, because it is deadly. Yeah. It is so different for every person. So you find that people will end up making terrible decisions, and those decisions are, well, I went out with my friends, because we lead young adults. And if we, and it's so not talked about, that's why it's the elephant in the room. Listen, I can ask questions on Instagram. I asked a question once about alcohol. So one question, I didn't get any responses. Like, no one wanted to talk about it. So,
and I think part of that is also maybe the fear, you know, of shame, guilt. Is this something I can really be honest about? Is it not? Especially as Christians. Like, I think it is an area of weakness and downfall for a lot of people. And I just don't think we as a whole have even created safe dialogue around what does it look like to be a believer and be able to consume alcohol in a healthy, moderate way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just don't think there's, and there's not enough examples for that either, mm-hmm. I feel like. Mm-hmm. Like, that's something I think about all the time. I'm like, well, how often is alcohol involved where you can really go, oh yeah, everyone had a couple of drinks and they were fine. It mm-hmm. almost feels like there's always a situation where when it's there, someone has too much or yeah. something happens. So it's just, yeah, I feel like there's not good examples for that either.
Yeah. And if someone's going to overindulge, they're going to overindulge. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It's just how it is.
Yeah.
I think it's when, like I said, we use the law as the baseline, like to say,
absolutely.
Okay, if you're under the age, don't drink. You yeah. know, that's what oh, we do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the age changes country to country. We've been talking about that.
Right, yeah, we were talking about that.
And we're thinking, like, even the fascination with alcohol over in the U.S. is that somewhat yeah. connected to the fact that people have to wait till they're 21, till they can have a drink.
Yeah.
Is that a good thing? Or is that, like, a thing that makes it forbidden for longer?
Yeah.
That it's like, oh, you know what?
Like, increases the curiosity.
Yeah, because you know what I mean? Like, we counsel couples all the time. And we say, yo, you're all sneaking behind, you know, holding hands at church, singing holy, holy, holy.
Yeah.
And you guys are sleeping together. And it's kind of like a little secret.
Mm-hmm.
That secretive part is also fuel.
Yeah.
To how exciting, absolutely. You know, the sex that you're having out of marriage is. Mm-hmm. It's a secret. So it's like, oh my gosh.
Yep.
And then it has this sting of guilt after, but it has mm-hmm. this adrenaline rush yep. before. That's mm-hmm. that may not be there when you get married and it's no longer a secret.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, yeah, you should be having sex. Mm-hmm. It's actually a good thing that you are. Mm-hmm. And it's like a part of that. And I think the part is like the adrenaline of going, okay, even the buying of the alcohol mm-hmm. is like a, and then making a fake ID is mm-hmm. like, oh my gosh. And then moving into, like, does that fuel this weird relationship with alcohol? Because where we're from, you drink when you're 18.
Yeah.
So you don't actually have that much time
to
have this fascination with it.
Yeah, very true.
You know what I mean? Because 16, your parents are watching you like a hawk. And mm-hmm. then 18, they're like, oh, well, if you want to have a beer, have a beer. Like, what's the problem?
Right.
So it's like that weird kind of, is it, do you think it's a thing or am I just making that up?
No, it's interesting because I think it definitely is a factor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think anything that has kind of that, like, secretive, we love that, right? That's our sinful nature, like, in full blown, like, we run
fruit.
And hide, right? And I think there's an element to that. Part of me does have to wonder, like, just from my own experiences as a teenager, like, the drinking limit was 18, but it was still, like, rampant in, like, my teenage years and my peers. And I think maybe that leads me to, because I do think what you're saying is very valid, and I think that really is a part of it for kind of that, like, long waiting for, you know, or even, like, when people are like, well, I don't know when I'm going to get married, so I'm waiting so long to have sex. I'm just going to have it, you know? I definitely think that's a part. I think the other part maybe that brings me to kind of some of my other experiences, and I think maybe one of the parts, too, that we tend to kind of shy away from talking about, even as believers, is just sometimes what alcohol is used for, you know, and whether that's for, like, numbing pain. That you feel or, you know, really sometimes, you know, if we dig a little deeper, a lot of the times with very young teenagers that are drinking and involved in consuming alcohol, a lot of the time it's due to something else. And sometimes
this pain.
And you're kind, you're like, this is, it's given to you as like an option to numb or to escape or to pretend or to fit in. You know, and I think those are very real things across the board, whether you're in Zimbabwe or whether you're in the United States. I think we all have wounds. And sometimes when you've experienced them as a young person, they can, dealing with them can manifest itself in destructive behaviors, whether it be alcohol, drugs, sex, you name it.
And there's this baseline of like truth that we have to kind of get back to, right? And and kind of understand that, okay, so if God created it, right? And and we have this refresher course of the fact that it was something good. It's like, hey, you saved the good wine for last in John chapter 2. And then we have another case of the fact that Jesus actually created it. Like he actually made it to be enjoyed, like to be consumed and enjoyed. So it's like every time we have to think about something, we have to think of how Satan perverts the things that God created for good.
So good.
So he turns like a glass of wine that is tasty, and man, you savor that glass of wine with every sip of it. You savor it. He turns that enjoyment and glorification of God who made the grapes, who made the guy, who made the wine, made the who even created the process that would make wine and knew it. And that glorifying the creator in that glass becomes 20 glasses that turn into drunkenness. That's what Satan goes, okay, let me pervert that good thing and let me make it this. So for example, you'll take everything and do that. You'll take a steak and turn it into gluttony. You'll take sex and turn it into pornography. You'll turn. So it's like understanding that God creates these good things that the enemy perverts. And so there's this understanding that everything can be enjoyed for the glory of God in its right setting and in the right quantity. And then everything can be, that those same things can be perverted, and they have, and that's the enemy's deal. He's not creative.
Yeah. So he is not creative.
He's taking God's creation and then perverting it
and
messing it up. And so that's I think a good place to start, but then having to understand that, hey, listen, is this glorifying God, or is this just making, is this now over here?
Yeah.
Is this in the perversion, destruction area, or is this in the glorifying area?
Yeah.
And I think that's where we kind of have to go. Okay, that's the question you have to ask yourself in all these things.
Very true.
So, fun fact, because we have fun facts, because now we're talking about faith, right? And alcohol consumption. And I think I wanted to ask one thing before I give you this cool fact. What about the notion that we can't have a good time unless there's alcohol present? True or false?
False. Absolutely false.
No good times can be had without any booze.
Oh, no, I'm saying they can be.
Oh, sorry. That's what I wanted to actually ask, actually. The fact that people say we can't have a good time unless there's alcohol present.
That's not true.
You can have a good time in the absence.
Yes, that's what I am. Sorry.
So you're saying that you could have a dry wedding and it would be fun.
We had a dry wedding and it was fun.
Oh, we did.
Our wedding was dry.
Oh, geez, I forgot. So what was... Oh, that dude brought his own
little
canister.
He brought his own little flask, and he would go out to the parking lot and drink it and come back.
So I was like, I'm pretty sure there's nothing in the punch, dude.
We had a dry wedding.
Oh,
and we had a blast. And if you saw video clips of our friends dance, you probably would have thought some of them were. But
they
we had
out the lawnmower.
So much fun.
So it can be had.
Absolutely.
You can have a party. Absolutely. You can have a 4th of July party, no beer.
Absolutely.
Jeez. This is revelation.
I mean, I really just think, I think too that that's maybe one of the ways that it's being perverted, right?
It's like
that you can't have a good time without that. Yeah. Or that people won't come if you don't have that.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know one person that asked us why we didn't have alcohol at our wedding. Like, wow. No one was like, this is weird.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, not one.
No, and I don't know why we didn't, but there was a reason. I've forgotten.
I think
it's expensive.
No, well, that was part of it. But two, I just didn't want it at the wedding. And I think that, you know, in all vulnerability, part of my story and my family story is that my dad was an alcoholic when we were growing up. And he was going to be at the wedding too. And I think one of the things that I have learned is that and I'm the same way, like if I have friends, I always ask them first if that is awkward for them. Can I drink around them? Can I not? And so there were lots of different factors for our wedding. And I actually remember your mom and I having a conversation. She was like, oh, you just want lemonade and iced tea and something. And I think she was like a little bit shocked in the beginning. But I love that she was just like, okay, that's what you want. And it's your guys' day. And it was just great. Like, so there were lots of different factors for me. But I think, one of them just being sensitivity to, I didn't know where everybody was that was going to be at our wedding. And I think, you know, that's one thing that I think, and I could correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I can speak for both Rob and I, that we care a lot about the people we have around us when we're doing certain things, and being aware of who may be there as to how and why we do things. And I think that that's also a way that at least I have some convictions for leading by example, and knowing when is the right time to open up a bottle of wine in front of people and when isn't. And I think that that's something that I'm sensitive to, and it's, I don't know, that's just one of my own personal.
So yeah, you're just aware things. Of that. Yeah. That's good. Because I didn't know. I just rocked up to get hitched, man. I had plans. I had things I had to get done. I get those I do's.
Okay, tell us your fun facts.
So yeah, I was going to tell you my fun facts, but I was going to say, wow, I think it's good for people to know that a good time can be had, and it's not alcohol. It's not saying alcohol is wrong. It's not saying that it's messed up. But then their facts, you know, overconsumption leads to destroyed families, destroyed lives.
Yeah.
But a good time can be had without it.
Absolutely.
And not to elevate it to like idolatry, to go, well, we can't do this because there's no alcohol. It's like, come on, man, like you can.
Yeah.
And so just being able to shove down the idolatry and allow it to just be a thing,
mm-hmm.
that it can or cannot be there, will make a difference now.
Yeah.
Personally, sometimes when I go to weddings as a guy who doesn't drink, sometimes I'm like, oh, you might want some people to be loose. You just want them to loosen up. You don't want them to be stuck up at a wedding. You know what I mean? And some dances, and usually, guys, I just have to say, mainly where I live right now, I tend to go to more Caucasian weddings, and just the dances that come up with a little bit of alcohol, just a little bit. They are fascinating. I love watching and observing, you know, dances being recreated and reinvented. You've never watched if you've never enjoyed a wedding until you've seen
the wobble
or people who've had two glasses of wine at least dance to Sweet Caroline.
Oh.
Or Thriller.
Oh my God.
Or Just Beat It. It's amazing. I love it. So here's the thing. Okay, guys, the thing that you've been waiting for. Which denomination drinks the most? All right, guys, drum roll. This is how we're gonna wrap this up. Where you at? What's your denomination? Okay. So yeah, I read this article on Relevant Magazine, actually. Lutherans, you win. You are the winners. You drink the most. 76%. Oh, geez. Don't judge. Praise be. 76% regularly drink. They're like, yo, the Lutherans are in the house. So if you want to go to, if it's a Lutheran wedding, you know what it's going to be. Methodists a second. You know, the Methodists. Wow. I thought they would be up there. I did. I met a few myself.
Okay.
62%. I will be like, yo, yeah.
Wow.
And then Pentecostal churches and assemblies of God, 23%. Baptists, 33%. You know, we've always judged the Baptists.
So wait, Pentecostals were the least, right?
Pentecostals
are the least.
Yeah, I was
going to say, that sounds accurate.
And then, yeah.
Then Baptists?
Then Baptists are 33%.
Okay.
And non-denominational, you know, they never know. They don't even know who they are, where they are, where they stand. So they just drink. Sometimes they don't drink. It's like, but you know, there was no Presbyterians in their research.
That's interesting.
So Presbyterians, I don't know, man. Where you at? You need to let us know. My experience has been 100% of you.
Yeah.
99% of my crew. Definitely.
It just always makes me think about church planting assessments. Always.
I had someone say this to me, which was the best. Someone said this to me in real life. They said, so in Zimbabwe, you said that people were like, they can't go to church if they don't until they stop drinking. And I was like, yeah, it's like a moralistic culture. They'll say, I can't go to church. I have to stop drinking first. It's like, man, I go to evening services on Saturday because I can go to church until I have a drink. I was like, room. That's amazing.
Oh my, that's
all that to say, guys, we're glad we can end on a light note and say that. But let us know your thoughts, you know, let us know what you think about alcohol. Listen, it's an elephant in the room. If this is the quietest episode, we would totally understand.
Yeah.
But if we start having conversations around this, trust me, like we get to find more healing and more freedom right at the same time, simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to say that we're going to put a number on our Instagram page, just like anonymous places you can call if you're struggling with alcoholism. If you think you're like, hey, listen, man, I think I'm an alcoholic. Like, here's a number to call. Just for a resource for you to be able to reach out to someone. So you'll find that on our Instagram page. We'll post it. We'll put it in put a link maybe.
Yeah. Rob Chief, Lisa Chief.
Yeah. Rob Chief, Lisa Chief, or Cookies and Cream because we have a page.
Oh, yeah.
Holla back.
Oh, I forgot about that.
All right. So, guys, have a great weekend.
Yes.
Friday. Enjoy it.